Welcome to the Bart's FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and you're listening to an interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war. Good evening, patriots. Well, this morning I had the honor and privilege of speaking to one of America's legends in both politics and, I would say, activism and culture and this and the culture itself. And it was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We had quite an amazing conversation, and he's an amazing man, and it's very humbling to speak to somebody in the Kennedys anyway, but in particular for all the work that he has done. I don't know how much you know about Robert, but Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. is the son of former New York State Senator and U.S. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy and nephew of former President John F. Kennedy. He is an attorney, he's an environmental activist, and he's a syndicated talk radio host. He is also co-founder and president of Waterkeeper Alliance, an environmental protection organization focused on the preservation and conservation of water resources. He also runs a program for the protection of children. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. walks the talk. He understands the threats that are currently here. He is a, as he mentions in the interview that you'll hear very, very shortly, he grew up as a Democrat and as a liberal Democrat, but truly sees himself as what that definition should be, which is a libertarian. He believes heavily in the Constitution. He believes in equal rights. And he believes in the responsibility to have people be well-informed to make well-informed decisions. Most recently, he has become known across the United States for his position on this new injection. And he's very clear that he's not anti-vax, but he is against this injection that is being forced upon people that is still in the experimental phase and which the information is being obscured and not truly being exposed for what it really is. Now, just to highlight, Robert Kennedy Jr. also runs the Defender, which is the childrenhealthdefense.org blog, and I'll put these links under tonight's podcast. I'd highly encourage you to support that organization. They're doing some amazing work. They have their own film unit. They have their own publisher. And they're fighting aggressively. He also has a podcast on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple. So all these links will be below. I encourage you to follow him, support his work. He's a great man, a great patriot, and it was an honor to speak with him. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Robert F. Kennedy, and I hope you enjoy this interview. Robert, I want to begin by telling you what a pleasure and an honor it is to have you on the show today. It's very humbling, especially with all that your family represents to this nation and the amount of work that you've done, in particular lately, I wouldn't just say lately, but what you've become very well known for lately is your position on the vaccine issue. So I'm just going to kind of open it up and let you kind of begin where you'd like, but this is a very pressing issue and you've done an amazing amount of work in globally as well. Where would you like to begin?
The big issue now is kind of the censorship. And, you know, the censorship began with me very long ago. And part of the censorship is just characterizing me as anti-vax, which is a strategic pejorative that is deployed by the pharmaceutical industry and by its captive regulators and allies in order to discredit anybody who questions, you know, essentially you questions a pharmaceutical product. And I am not anti-vaccine. I, as I've said for many, many years, I just am an advocate for the safest vaccines possible, for robust science, for independent regulators who are free from conflicts of interest and financial entanglements with the industry that they're supposed to regulate. And we don't, at Children's Health Defense, which is my organization, we never advise people not to get vaccines. We don't give any advice at all. We just try to give information. And it's important, you know, informed choice is one of the mainstays of medicine. And in order to have informed choice, people need information and they need to be able to ask questions and understand what the risks and benefits are of any medical product. All medical products have risks, and people need to know specifically, have to be able to make individual assessments. The COVID vaccines are really, you know, the idea that one size fits all is kind of insane, because the risk from COVID, for example, to the different age groups is enormous. The variability in risk, the risk to children or anybody under 55 is a fraction of the risk that they would encounter from the seasonal flu. And if you're under 20, it's 0.00001. So it's, you know, four zeros and a one. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of somebody's risk from the seasonal flu. But the risk to older people, particularly those over 70, those cohorts, is very, very high. It could be as high for certain cohorts of 7%. It's much more dangerous than a seasonal flu. So though the calculation for, you know, whether or not you want to be vaccinated really depends on who you are and what situation your situation is, what your comorbidities are, whether you're diabetic, whether you have asthma, whether you're overweight, and what age group you're in. And then you have to look at the individual vaccines and look at their record. How, you know, we need to know how many people are dying after vaccination from the Pfizer vaccine in the let's say in the 15 or 20 days after vaccination. We need the day-to-day death counts, the body counts for every vaccine, for the Pfizer vaccine, for the Moderna, for the J&J vaccine, and for the AstraZeneca. And we don't have any of that information. And that's wrong. It's the easy information to get. We ought to have a surveillance system that works and looks at the post-licensing performance of these vaccines or the post-marketing performance of these vaccines. And we don't have a system like that. We have a system called VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. But according to HHS's own studies, that system collects or captures fewer than 1% of vaccine injuries. So that's not going to tell us anything about safety. And, you know, if you want informed consent, you need information, and you need good information. And I think that the thing that frightens everybody about the way that this pandemic has been managed is that it really, there's a mountain of evidence that it has been managed in a way that is not transparent. We are not getting the best information, where the information is being manipulated. And it's always being manipulated in one direction to amplify the apparent risk and the fear of the COVID, and to de-emphasize and undercount the risk from the vaccines. And then you know, the whole kind of drama that occurred of denying the entire American population access to therapeutic remedies and off-the-shelf remedies and patent-expired remedies like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and hydrocortical steroids and vitamin D. You know, why weren't people being told about those things? Why weren't, you know, why weren't doctors treating patients in the 3 weeks after diagnosis? Why was it the standard of care? Why was it Tony Fauci's standard of care, which is enforced all over the country, that you go in and you get a COVID diagnosis and then you go home with no treatment and wait for 3 weeks till you go to the hospital? And then once you're in the hospital, you know, for many people, it's a death sentence. Why weren't they treated, instead of flattening the curve by putting masks on, why weren't we flattening the curve by giving people ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? And, you know, and these other remedies that are, you know, that other countries are using, that doctors are having enormous beneficial impacts when they use in this country. And that's very, very well documented. And it's documented in some cases with 20, 30, 40 large, powerful, peer-reviewed studies, placebo-controlled studies. Why are we doing that? And so all of those questions are questions that need to be asked. They need to be debated. And, you know, we need an open dialogue about these things. There is no place for censorship or authoritarianism in medicine. Medicine is about listening to people. It's about, you know, about getting second opinions, about collaborating on treatments, about talking to other doctors, about talking to people who actually treat COVID patients. You know, the guys who are dictating these policies, Tony Fauci has never treated a COVID patient. Redfield has never treated it. Elizabeth Birx has never treated a COVID patient. Why aren't we talking to the frontline doctors and finding out what they're doing? And finding out, you know, what strategies are successful, and how do we stop these people from going to hospitals, from ever getting to the hospital? It's easy to do that study. They're right now denying treatment during the first 3 weeks after COVID. Why don't you give treatment to half people? If you're going to deny it, they're going to be denied anyway. Why don't you give it to half of them and to see if those that half fares better than the ones who don't? We've committed $48 billion to vaccines so far, and $1.4 billion to viral, you know, antivirals, mainly remdesivir, one antiviral that is Tony Fauci's pet product. And how much have we devoted to looking at off-the-shelf remedies? Zero. There is no task force at the federal level with where doctors are getting together and sharing treatment information and talking to each other and looking at data from all over the world. The millions of people have gotten this disease and the millions of different ways they've been treated. Why aren't those being discussed? Why aren't they being published? Why aren't they being debated? Instead, anybody who mentions hydroxychloroquine, who mentions ivermectin, is removed from the internet. Why is that? Why is that? Why do they seem to want to corral us into one shoot that leads to vaccines? Why for, you know, a year were we locked up and told the only thing we can do is wear masks and lock down? Why were we told load up on vitamin D, take ivermectin if you get sick, take hydroxychloroquine if you get sick, let's see if we can improve mortality. Why is Tony Fauci still in office? Why is there a guy who has presided over one of the worst outcomes of any country in the world? You know, we have the highest death rates. We have 100 times the death rates of Cuba, of places like Japan, which have a much older population than us. Why have they, a tiny fraction of the death rate? We got 1,500 people per million. And there are many countries that have less than 20 people per million. So, why are we paying attention to anything that Tony Fauci says when he's been such... Here's a guy who his entire career he's failed upward. He's been in his position since 1984. His job is to prevent the proliferation of chronic disease, of infectious and allergic diseases, and autoimmune diseases. That's what he runs. And under his leadership, autoimmunity, allergic diseases, chronic disease have gone from 12% to 54%. How is this guy still in office? His whole career is an abject failure. Even when you ask Tony Fauci what his great success is, he'll talk about the drugs that he's marketed, that he's created. He is an incubator for the pharmaceutical industry. That's all. He has nothing to do with public health. He's been a public health catastrophe for this country. And, he's turned that agency. He's taken the $7.6 billion budget, $6 billion from the taxpayer, and then $1.7 billion from the military to do some pretty sketchy stuff, incidentally. And he is like Wuhan, he's taken that money, and instead of devoting it to public health, he has helped make this country the most dependent on pharmaceutical products of any country in the world. We take three times as much drugs as other countries. We pay the highest prices for them. Pharmaceutical products, many of which he has created in his lab and with his system of PIs and principal investigators, are now the third biggest killer in our country after cancer and heart attacks. 800,000 people a year. And how is this guy in office still? How does anybody take him seriously? He's never shown that he can protect public health.
It's a very important part of the discussion. What I would like to go back to, though, is your discussion about informed consent. Because right now we're dealing with an experimental injection, what some are calling a vaccine, but that's even questionable because it's not curing anything. And yet it's being leveraged by corporations to mandate it if you're going to keep your job. This administration is now suggesting that they're going to invoke a COVID passport or vaccine passport to prove that you're vaccinated as a step towards controlling your air travel. And yet this is an entirely experimental. We're not even past stage 3 trials. What is the legal ramifications of that, and even greater? What are we really looking at here?
Well, you're right. These are not approved vaccines. They're not licensed. And that's really probably the reason that Tony Fauci worked so hard to kill ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and the other remedies, because his vaccines cannot get emergency use authorization if there is another drug that is already licensed for any purpose that shows that it has a beneficial impact on COVID. So in order for him to get his vaccine enterprise to work, he had to kill anything that actually helped patients. And he did that methodically, deliberately, and systematically. And so now they've got these EUA vaccines that have not gotten approval. Approval is really easy for them to get because the people who sit on the VRBPAC committee, which is Vaccine-Related Biological Products Committee at FDA, virtually all of those are what are Tony Fauci's PIs, principal investigators. So they're people who are chosen because they take money from Tony Fauci. Oh, he controls that committee. He controls the Drug Safety Monitoring Boards. He controls the Institute of Medicine. He controls the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices, which is a companion committee inside of the CDC and mandates vaccines. And the people on there, he always says, oh, these are independent scientists that are going to figure this out. They're not independent. There are people who are utterly reliant on him giving them grants every year. They work in institutions like Harvard and Baylor and NYU and Columbia, and they get hundreds of millions of dollars a year from Tony Fauci to develop new drugs. And if they do a wrong vote, their careers are over. He has the capacity to literally ruin any scientist in the world. He gives away every year about 15 times what Bill Gates gives away. And so he's ushered these vaccines through, which, by the way, he developed the Moderna vaccine. His agency owns half the patent. They will collect 50% of the royalties. He has six guys who work for him, who he has rewarded by sharing the patent. Each one of them gets a little piece of that patent, and they can collect $150,000 a year for the next 17 years, from as long as that gets approved, which he's going to be in charge of. And that's how he kind of, ensures loyalty from his staff. He's paying them off through these pharmaceutical kickbacks. And everybody is in on the fix. Everybody is making money, or everybody in the entire approval process. But under the law, he cannot get emergency use authorization for any vaccine if there is some other medicine that has already been approved for any purpose that is shown to beneficially impact COVID. People are, they make people better. So he had to kill ivermectin. He had to kill hydroxychloroquine, or his entire empire would collapse. But the good news is, at least temporarily, even though everybody is making you think that they can force you to take these vaccines, and they're going to do it in every way they can. They're going to shame people into it. They're going to embarrass them into it. But legally, they cannot force you to. So schools like Rutgers, which this week announced that all students had to get these emergency vaccines, these are experimental products. It says right in the statute, you cannot use coercion to get somebody to take this product. It's against the law. And not only that, but people who do that are almost certainly liable for any injuries that come from that vaccine. So if a kid goes to Rutgers and he doesn't want to take the vaccine, and he takes it because Rutgers made him, and that kid gets injured, they can actually sue Rutgers. They can't sue the vaccine company because they're immune from liability. It can't sue the doctor or the CVS who gave it to them because they're all immune. But he probably can sue Rutgers because it's illegal, even in this country today, to force human beings to participate in an experiment in which they're given a experimental medical intervention. You know, we signed treaties after World War II, the Nuremberg Protocol, et cetera, that said we'd never do that. But it's been part of Western medicine for, generations, that you cannot force people to participate in as guinea pigs and lab rats in experiments. And these are, by definition, experimental products.
And yet here we are. It's amazing. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny sent me over an announcement by an athletic club. I'm going to read it. I just like to get your comment on it because it's very interesting how it reads. It says, please be advised to assure the safety of our staff and existing clients, CP Fitness will not be accepting new personal training clients who have taken the experimental vaccine. This decision has been made in consultation with our insurance company as well as health professionals. The unknown health effects of the mRNA vaccines are not covered by our liability, and also we had to take into consideration reported side effects such as viral shedding, seizures, and death into consideration. We apologize for any inconvenience and will reevaluate our policy when clinical trials of the experimental injection are completed in 2023. Thank you. So it's a fascinating statement to me because the insurance companies are backing off of this on their liability side, not the health side, but the liability side.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know exactly. You know, I'd love to know more details about what that means when they say they've consulted with the insurance companies, because it doesn't actually say the insurance company, you know, told them to do this. It may be that the insurance company told them that we will continue to insure you, or even if you do this. So I'm not sure how to interpret that. But anyway, it's really, I love hearing it. And, you know, it's somebody who's critical thinking, who's free-spirited, who's extremely courageous, because they're going against the tide. It's people, whoever CP Fitness is, it's somebody who probably actually does care about public health, unlike our regulators. And, you know, now that the doctors, any doctor who actually cares about public health and the Hippocratic Oath, is, you know, their licenses are in jeopardy. If they question vaccines, if they say, I'm not going to ask my patients to participate in the human experiment, I'm going to wait and see if these vaccines get licensed, those people are being punished. In some countries, they're being jailed. They're being delicensed in many countries, including the United States.
Well, this brings to mind a quote from President John F. Kennedy, and it goes back to his speech when he addressed the American Newspaper Publishers Association on April 27th, 1961. And this is what he said. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies on covert means for expanding its spheres of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. That seems to be a rather profound and prophetic statement considering where we are today.
Well, he was specifically talking at the time about communism, but he also was very conscious that there was a deep state. The week that my uncle took office, on my birthday in 1961, Eisenhower made this speech about the military-industrial complex. And he warned America that this military-industrial complex, which, you know, would have included all the corporations that are part of that complex, which at that time was the steel industry, the oil industry, and a couple of other large industries, and including the pharmaceutical industry. Today, the pharmaceutical industry is the spear tip of the military-industrial complex. In 2009, President Obama made the official declaration, which was to make biosecurity the leading edge of U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, the health agencies have always been closely aligned with the military. The Public Health Service, which is, you know, evolved into HHS, was founded in the Civil War and then into the Spanish-American War and World War One. NIH was started in World War One, and they were military agencies. That's why people at HHS, higher level people, wear uniforms, and they have ranks like the admirals of the Public Health Service, the Surgeon General, et cetera. And NIAID came out of the Naval, which is Tony Fauci's agency, came out of the Naval Micropathogen Lab. And all of them have been closely aligned with the military, and those alignments have continued. They were started originally as national security defense agencies to keep soldiers healthy during wartime, but that mandate then was extended to peacetime. But they've always had these very, very close entanglements with the military. And now more recently with the intelligence agencies. If you look at Event 201, which was Bill Gates's simulation, those was before COVID, before coronavirus. He simulated a coronavirus pandemic in October of 2019. So about 2 weeks before the coronavirus pandemic showed its first victims, he was simulating at the Pierre Hotel in New York a worldwide coronavirus pandemic that would kill 65 million people and that would require interventions from around the globe. And I think there were 10 people at the center table who engaged in the four simulations, and two of them were CIA. So Admiral Haynes from the Public Health Service is a lifelong CIA agent and then a former deputy director of NSA and CIA, who was also at that table. And they spent an entire simulation talking about how to censor vaccine misinformation on the social media. When they use the term vaccine misinformation, it's a euphemism for any information that departs from official proclamations or orthodoxy, whether it's true or not. So it has nothing to do with misinformation. And in fact, when Facebook takes one of my posts down for alleged misinformation, it's not actually saying what I'm saying is untrue. They've never been able to point to anything that's untrue on my site. What they say is that it differs from CDC and WHO policies. And then they refer you to the CDC website. So really, it's just an arm of the government that is, they're acting as a surrogate for this kind of what is looking more and more like a totalitarian coup d'etat by the pharmaceutical industries and, this military industrial complex against American democracy. We remember what happened in our country after 9/11. When suddenly you had pat downs and x-ray machines when you went to the airport, and they passed the Patriot Act and they got rid of habeas corpus for a while. And they started tracking and tracing people. The intelligence agencies that are prior to that were not allowed to even follow people in the United States became deeply enmeshed in these projects, spy on American citizens and et cetera. And we saw the growth of this security industry. And, they were telling us, like, unlike the Russians, we had a Cold War that I grew up in, and that the speech that we began this discussion with was a reaction to the Cold War. But, the Russians were one country and they were an identifiable enemy. And the Berlin Wall came down in 1988, and the Russians were no longer a threat. They needed a new threat. And, we all thought what we said to each other at that time and what the paper said is, okay, the Cold War is over. Now we're going to hammer our swords into plowshares, and all that money that was devoted to weapon systems and to the military, et cetera, we now will be able to spend on schools and roads and sewage treatment plants and, solar energy and making our country habitable and sustainable and a dignified place where people can prosper and where the money that you earn is coming back into your community, et cetera. It was called the peace windfall, the peace dividend. And we were suddenly going to all be rich because the money that we've been pouring into the military, we were now going to pour into making our country a better place. And what happened? None of that happened. They just started finding new enemies. And in 1996, so 8 years later, the so-called, well, of course, we went into Iraq And, you know, Kuwait, Saddam Hussein, with our permission, with permission from Rumsfeld directly, invades Kuwait. And we attack Iraq, which is a dictatorship that has invaded another dictatorship. And, you know, why do we do that? So we go in and we, you know, we do that in the midst of that. We station our troops in Saudi Arabia, in the land of Mecca, which we know is a, which every intelligent agency could tell you that is going to be calculated and make us a target for terrorism. You cannot, you know, it's against every Muslim in the world knows you cannot put foreign soldiers in Saudi Arabia, in the land of, you know, of Mecca. And we did that. And then, you know, 2 years after that, we had the first attack on the World Trade Center in 96. And then terrorists now replace the Russians. And that's a great person to attack, because terrorism isn't even an individual. It's a strategy. And it's usually a strategy of poor people who are trying to fight rich people, because they don't have B-52 bombers, so they have to use, you know, stealth attacks. And then they come back in 9/11, 2001, and they do it again. And then it becomes, you know, then we get all the Patriot Act, and we have a Homeland Security and all of this stuff. But in 2009 is when they say, okay, now we're going to target a terrorist that will never go away. It can never be beaten. It will be permanent. It is the microbe. And we are going to make the biosecurity the cutting edge, the spear tip of American foreign policy. And we're going to turn our foreign policy over to pharmaceutical companies and get them to make everybody rich by vaccinating everybody in the world. And, you know, and that Bill Gates was part of that. And the next year, 6 months later, he goes in front of the UN and says, I'm going to give $10 billion. And I'm going to take over WHO. And we're going to create Gavi and CEPI and PASS, all his quasi-governmental agencies that everybody thinks is part of the government, but it's just Bill Gates. And we're going to vaccinate everybody in the world with as many vaccines as possible. And he said, he announced at that, that he's the first guy to speak in front of the UN who's not a head of state, who has no diplomatic portfolio, not an elected official. And he's allowed to go to speak there because he's getting $10 billion. And he announces the decade of the vaccines. Nobody else voted for that. Nobody said, yeah, this is a good idea. It was just Bill Gates saying, this is what we're going to do to the world. And so that's 2009. Well, guess what? 2019, the World Health Organization, which he runs, announces that the biggest threat to world security, one of the 10 biggest threats, is that there was no science on that. There was no study that came out and said people are dying because of vaccine hesitancy. It was just a political announcement. And then 3 months later, you have Adam Schiff announcing that, telling the Facebook and Instagram and all of these platforms and Google that they needed to start censoring people like me who question the vaccine orthodoxies. And then you have the launch, you know, 6 months later, 8 months later of the pandemic. And that's the end. And now, you know, we're all seeing this. What Eisenhower on January 17, 1961 predicted, the ascendancy of the military-industrial complex, its triumph over the institutions of American democracy, its triumph over individual independence. And we all now have to buckle under and do what we're told in order to battle the microbes. And the weird thing about, you know, for me, Scott, I'm a liberal Democrat. I was brought up with liberal values, which to me means, you know, adherence to the Constitution. It means personal freedom. It means, you know, recognition of human rights and civil rights. And, you know, to me, it's a libertarian philosophy. Liberal and libertarian should be the same. And yet all of the people that I grew up with are all, you know, people and who I've been aligned with politically my whole life are the people who are now calling for censorship. And, you know, once you censor, then the entire Constitution is up for grabs. What are the other constitutional rights that have all been overrun? Well, let's start with freedom of religion. One of the first things they did was to abolish religious exemptions, which existed for the vaccination, which existed for 150 years. They closed the churches and they kept the liquor stores open as essential. The liquor stores are essential, but the churches are not. And then they went after freedom of assembly. They told you that you can't assemble. You have to keep 6 feet away from other people. The freedom to jury trials, the Seventh Amendment, Sixth Amendment, jury trials, which is, you know, they said you can't sue a vaccine company no matter how negligent they are, no matter how reckless they are, no matter how grievous your injury, you cannot sue them. And then they went after property rights. They said everybody closed down their businesses. They went after warrantless searches, our guarantee against that. I say we're going to track and trace everybody. And Bill Gates brags that his satellites can look at every human being on the planet and every square foot of Earth 24 hours a day. And then they go after due process, which, you know, instead of having what we used to have in this country, that if government passes a rule, you've got to be able to have it. First of all, they publish it. And you have a notice of comment rulemaking. So you publish the rule, the government agency that wants the rule, publish the rule. Let's say it's a rule that says everybody's got to wear masks. They publish that rule and they tell exactly what it's going to mean, that you wear masks in these circumstances and not in these circumstances. And then they have to put an environmental impact statement, a regulatory impact statement, an economic impact statement that says here are the consequences. First of all, here's the justification of it. Here's all the scientific studies that we're relying on. Here are the scientific opinions that we're relying on to make this rule. None of that ever happened. It was just one guy, a guy who's never treated a COVID patient, who says masks don't work. And then 2 months later, and there's no such thing as asymptomatic transmission in the history of respiratory illness. That's what he said, quote unquote, on 60 Minutes. 2 months later, he says, everybody strap them on. And now, you know, in a month after that, put on another one. No science offered. Just do what you're told. And then they're supposed to publish that with all the studies. There's a 30-day or 60-day comment period where everybody who's going to be affected or doesn't like that gets to comment and the, you know, say, my business could be hurt by this if you do this, and here's what you can do instead. And the government has to respond to all those in writing and publicly. And then there is a public hearing. And they have to bring all of their science witnesses and the people who authored all the studies that they're relying on. And we bring our studies. And we bring our scientists. And then we have direct examination and cross-examination. We fight it out in front of an administrative law judge who then issues an opinion and a decision that, you know, explains the basis for his opinion. It can't be arbitrary and capricious. He has to follow the facts. And you don't like it, you can appeal to a court. None of that happened. That's what the Due Process Clause guarantees. None of it has happened. It's just one guy, a dictator, totalitarian technocrat, who doesn't consult with other doctors, who doesn't consult with other experts, who just makes rules. And by the way, here's what they say. Listen to the experts. It's become the watchword of the Democratic Party. We follow the science. We follow the experts. Well, guess what? First of all, science is not what the CDC says science is. Science is what you get by going on PubMed and reading peer-reviewed publications. And then comparing them to each other and thinking critically about them. That's what science is. It's not what a guy from CDC declares it to be. And you can't trust the experts. That's not democratic. You can listen to them. You can't make rules based upon what they say. I fought over 500 lawsuits on environmental issues. Almost all of them involve some kind of scientific controversy. And guess what? We have experts who come in, and they're from Harvard and Yale and Columbia and Stanford. But Monsanto has its experts, and they're from Harvard and Yale and Columbia and Stanford too. We call them bioinstitutes, but they're still experts. And they're saying antithetical things based upon the same set of facts. There's no such thing as trust the experts. The experts never agree on anything. You can always find your expert and their expert. And what we're doing is saying, trust the pharmaceutical company's experts, you know, who happen to be living on taxpayer stipends in sinecures at our public health agencies, which are captured by the pharmaceutical companies. The whole thing is, you know, this project to dismantle the U.S. Constitution and our Bill of Rights.
Robert, you have been involved, as you stated, in litigation for the people and in just an immense amount of domains, from health of children and also in terms of water and environment. And you've seen firsthand this fight. And I think just as we kind of bring this to a close, what is the way ahead here? And obviously, we see an enormous amount of violation of the law and the Constitution, and you've just beautifully mapped out the complexities and the depths of this corruption. What do you see as the way ahead for America and for the people and to fight this tyranny, is the only way to put it, this being imposed upon the people, being forced on them to comply to a system that is anti-constitutional and basically just anti in the principle of just the natural rights that were given by God?
Well, you know, the way forward is to use all of the tools of advocacy that, you know, Martin Luther King talked about: agitation, legislation, litigation, and innovation. And particularly, we need to innovate by creating new ways of talking with each other, because the pharmaceutical companies now control all of these, you know, these tech barons like Mark Zuckerberg and Sergey Brin and Bill Gates and, you know, the other ones who all said, we are, you know, we're going to create these wonderful institutions like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram that will democratize the flow of information, and it's going to be great for democracy. And it's turned out to be just, you know, tools of totalitarianism for a technocracy and for a plutocracy. And so we need to build our own ways of communicating. And one of the things that we do at Children's Health Defense is we created the Defender, which is our newsletter, our daily newsletter, which is getting 1 million extra views every month, and which is a place where you can read all the things that are being censored elsewhere. But you know, we do actual fact checking. We print only things that are sourced and cited. And we make sure that if there's rumors on the internet, even rumors that benefit, you know, let's say, quote unquote, our side, we will check them. And things that you read on the Defender, you can rely on. So we don't even put the death counts. You know, we get every day hundreds of people who are sending us Instagram posts, Facebook posts of people who have died from the vaccine. And we don't print those because we can't verify them. So we only print things that we can verify. That you read it on the Defender, you can rely on it. And you know, that vehicle is now exploding. And, you know, people can go and you can look at it by going to Children's Health Defense / the Defender or / Defender, or just go to the Defender and sign up for it. And, you know, we're creating a community. We're creating an army of resistance. But we need we have a publishing company now. We had the best-selling book during the pandemic, Plague of Corruption. We have another book out right now, J.B. Hanley's book, Underestimated, which is already top of the bestseller list. We have a movie division, which put out actually the largest documentary in the history of the world, which was Plandemic. At the beginning, we put up Plandemic 1, Plandemic 2. We just have a new film called Medical Racism, which is about the disproportionate injury to Blacks, Americans from vaccine injury and the history of racism within the pharmaceutical division. So support us, support Children's Health Defense. Please follow my podcast. They've thrown me off of all the other, platforms, but they can't throw me off of podcasts, at least so far. And then, help us figure out other. We have big teams working on developing new platforms at where the censorship cannot happen. And we're looking at all kinds of really, really exciting and innovative ways to do that right now. And then just continue to be part of the Army, and ultimately it may require civil disobedience. It may require resistance in every part of your life. And, we all need to be courageous now. We need to understand, we need to remember the people who died for the U.S. Constitution because they believed that there were things that were worse than death, which was not having our freedom, not having our rights. There was a whole bunch of people in 1776 and between 1776 and 1784 who said, this is something that we're going to die for, these amendments. And those amendments are now being stripped from us. And we're being told, if you don't do this, you're going to die of COVID. And it's all lies. It's all about manipulating fear. And we need good information. We need to be able to stand up to these bullies and understand who they are. This is a good against evil battle. People need to know there is genuine evil in the world, and we need to fight it. And we need to be willing to give our lives to fight against what they have in store for us. So, Scott, I want to thank you for creating an oasis of freedom here on your courage, and you take a lot of heat for this, but creating a place where we can have these conversations, where we can have these debates, and where we can talk to our public. Thank you very much. And, I encourage all of your listeners to please join me on my podcast and to come to Children's Health Defense and sign up for the Defender. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. This is an absolute honor to have you on. If it's okay with you, I'd like to close with a prayer.
Absolutely.
Heavenly Father, thank you for this time that you've allowed us to join in an amazing conversation again to elevate truth, to bring light to the darkness. And as all things are said, once darkness is exposed to light, it can never go back again. It must become light. Lord, let us continue to be the light and the salt of the earth. Continue to protect those who speak truth, in particular to protect Robert as he continues to be a truth speaker and teller for the world on the many topics that he covers. We are blessed to have him here, and we're blessed to have your blessing in this conversation. And we say these things in Christ's holy name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Scott.
Well, thank you. It's very humbling and a huge honor to speak with you, and you have a very blessed day. So, Patriots, that was an amazing conversation with what I consider to be one of the greats in American history, and obviously part of the family lineage that has shaped our nation in so many levels. It's humbling to speak to Robert and anybody of the Kennedy family, for that matter. And I was very honored to have that conversation. I would highly encourage you to go to the Defender. It's childrenshealthdefense.org. Childrenshealthdefense.org. Those links will be below. And support his work and the great work that his organization is doing. As Robert said in there, it is time that we have to make a stand. And you've heard me speak of this. If you followed me, I've spoken about this from the beginning. It's using our gifts and talents, and it's also being bold in making a firm stand of what we will accept and what we will not. Our nation right now has been taken over by a corporatocracy. The Constitution, as it sits right now, is suspended. Anybody that tells you otherwise is just lying. They're trying to placate you to make you feel it's okay. We functionally have no government at this point in time. We have a corporate entities that are running the rules. In fact, if you listen to what is coming out of the fake Biden administration, they're telling you very clearly how this fight is going to be. In a response today to accusations about a COVID pass or vaccination pass, their statement was that they were leaving it to the marketplace to decide. What that translates to is that every corporation that controls the access to goods and services is now going to be implementing a pass in order to eventually to get gas, to get food, to get anything you need. They're going to demand that you have been injected with this DNA alternating substance. There is no one that's going to save us. I need to be very clear here. It's always been about us. And for those that are feeling that there's no hope, you don't know your history. Our founding fathers and the colonists of the time were facing the same type of threat. That threat was the United Kingdom and all of its controls through import-export, its Hudson Bay Company, the control of the shipping lanes, and yet they were bold. They innovated. They went against the king and they started to produce their own goods, even though they were forbidden to, and forbidden to on the risk of death. They organized amongst themselves. They called out people in their villages and in their towns. They went against the standing of the people and bought British goods. They were defiant. And they waged that war for almost 15 years. The war came to a culmination from 1770 to 1775. And during that period of time, they cut British imports by 50%, British exports by 50%. That it was devastating to the British coffers. For all that we know about this current state of affairs and the tyranny and the countries that are involved, and we can name them, the UK, the Vatican, the China, others that are involved in this attack on the United States are complicit in this. Wall Street, as part of our own country, one of the big organizations. We have corporations from Costco to Walmart to IBM, Google, Facebook, you name it. It's time that we make these decisions, and we have to make hard decisions. Those decisions have to be definitive. Are you buying from small producers in the United States? Are you avoiding Chinese-made products? Are you not or trying in every way to avoid using the products of these big corporations or participating with them? And in the process, we have to begin to innovate ourselves. Robert said it himself. We have to innovate solutions. We may have to go to some extremes. In 2016, when we stood up Kilroy Rising to support President Trump, we anticipated a blackout of the media. One of the solutions we came up with then, which is still pertinent today, was that we were setting up a printing facility where we could print flyers, and then we could distribute them using existing motorcycle networks. Motorcycle clubs that were all over the nation, we were tying into that they could start becoming our delivery people for information. There's always a solution to the problem. There's always a solution to the types of threats we're facing if we're willing to make the stand. Hopefully everybody's getting a garden going right now. This is going to be very important. And building those gardens up to give yourself some control over your food. You need to be aware of your neighborhood and who's going to be in common thought with you. And I'm going to be very bold when I say this. Much of this network is going to be built off of those that are of Christian faith. Because we are going to be the ones that are going to be persecuted because they see us as a threat. And we have a threat because we know the power of God and we don't need their tyranny. So it's time now to start making those hard decisions, to make a stand of where you're going to be. It's no longer an issue of compliance or bending. That's done. This is a time now that you're either in with a movement to free yourself from this tyranny, or you're walking with tyranny, but there's no more fence sitting. And Robert Kennedy's statements at the last, that we have to remember that there were people that died for this Constitution, and we may have to face that again. But there are things worse. There are things worse than death. And one of those is being enslaved in a tyranny, especially a tyranny that wants to change your DNA. So thank you for joining this evening. It was a very blessed evening with Robert. I encourage you again to please follow his sites. I put those links again will be below. The Defender, his podcast on Apple. He has an anchor site as well, which will be there. And support as much as you can. In the meantime, keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into this fight. Remember, God is with us. He will never forsake us, but we have to give our faith to God in all that we do. And in the end, God will win. I'll be back this evening at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Until then, or until the next time, God bless, and out for now.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Every thoughtful citizen who despairs of war and wishes to bring peace should begin by looking inward, by examining his own attitude towards the possibilities of peace. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it is unreal, but that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by man, and man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe they can do it again. Surely the opening vistas of space promise high costs and hardships, as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are a little longer, to rest, to wait. But this city of Houston, this state of Texas, this country of the United States was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. This country was conquered by those who move forward, and so will space. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Waited thousands of years to show its face. It has only one intent, to destroy God's light and to enslave. It has no scruples. It has no rules but one: to win at any cost. But we will never bow, for we are the remnant that will hold the line. This is war. We fight. We push. We climb. We never give in. We become the nightmare that evil didn't know could exist. We pray. We stand. We live by the words, "In God we trust." We fear nothing. We are the light that can never be extinguished. We are patriots. We are the digital army that will help deliver God's wrath.